You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Because there's nothing like a weekend pause with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Welcome back to She Pivots. I'm Carolyn Tisch Blodgett.
Welcome back to She Pivots. I'm your host, Emily Tisch Sussman. When I was planning this season, I wanted to make sure She Pivots was a means for building connections. I said during our season launch party that we're the generation of women who build bridges and don't tear each other down. And She Pivots is a way to empower women to look inward, define success for themselves and not by society's standards. And it's working. We're seeing a substantial change in the way women think about and talk about their lives and their careers. I'm so excited to dig deeper into these pivotal moments through these shorter, more conversational, candid convos this season. Let's jump right in. Today, we're kicking off the Gotham FC season by sitting down with the one, the only, Carolyn Tisch Blodgett, who is leading the way in the world of women's soccer and who also happens to be my amazing sister. So stay tuned as we dive into how she plans to take the magic she brought to Peloton as the head of global marketing as the owner in the emerging industry of women's soccer with Gotham FC. Let's jump right in.
I'm Carolyn Tisch Blodgett. I'm the CEO and founder of Next 3, which is the sports investment arm of our family's office. And I am the lead governor for Gotham FC, the women's soccer team.
So when I came up with the idea of this show, the idea was that personal things in our life change our professional trajectory. And I needed that thesis to be true because I felt like I had a really good career. And then I lost it. And I was worried that other people were going to look at me and be like, she must have gotten fired or like she must be a dud. Like how, like there's no possible way that she walked away from that. And when I thought about other validators and like other people that I thought validated this thesis, you were the first one that I thought of. Because Next 3 is not your first job. What did you do before this? What did you walk away from?
Okay, let's go back. Well, so my career was in operating, on the operating side. My background was in marketing. I worked at Digitas. I went to Harvard Business School. I worked at Pepsi. And well, there's a whole other story. We could talk about another point about changing directions of your career. But for, I think for this point, in this moment, my kind of formative role was I was the head of marketing for Peloton for 4 years. And when I joined the company, I joined when my oldest, Penelope, had just turned one. And the company was very small. We were this little known startup in New York. We worked out of a WeWork. We had 30,000 members, $60 million in revenue. It was really like when you thought of spinning, you thought of SoulCycle, Flywheel, and then this random other startup on 23rd Street called Peloton. By the time I left, it was a multi-billion dollar company. We had gone public. We had launched internationally. We launched multiple products. So it was really, it felt like a, you know, 20-year career smushed into four. But I left really, I would say, in its peak. And I left for very personal reasons. As I said before, I joined when Penelope, my oldest, was one. I basically spent the entire 4 years there with the sole goal of trying to get out of the office in time to get home for bedtime, which if it happened, it always looked met. By the time I got there, my kids were like one eye open and I was like, wait, I'm here. So it never felt like it was both the best thing that it was a transformative career defining moment. It was also personally the hardest 4 years of my life. I feel like now I am going to cry and I'm just going into therapy. And so I always knew, I felt like I was on I was sprinting on a treadmill, and I always knew that I was going to have to get off. And I didn't know what was going to be the thing that got me off of it. So I was there for my second child's birth, Theo. Took, I think, 36 hours of maternity leave before there was a brand crisis that brought me, you know, maybe not physically back into the office, but very much on my phone and working the whole time. And so when he was 2.5 years old, again, I'd already felt like this sprint needs to end. That's the whole point of a sprint, is that it ends at some point. So he was 2.5 years old and he had this lump on his head. And we had been kind of watching it, and my very casual pediatrician kept saying, like, it's fine, but we'll keep watching it. And now it's like 3 months later and it's still there. And he's like, okay, well, maybe we should get an ultrasound. And we get an ultrasound, and the radiologist, like, I think it's probably okay, but let's keep watching it. But it's impossible to get an appointment. Anyway, we get our second appointment with her. It happens to be when I'm supposed to be shooting our holiday commercial, which for Peloton is like when we 50% of our sales happen during the holidays, when I was supposed to be in Vancouver shooting the commercial. So I go back and forth with Will, my husband, like, should I go? Should I not go? And he's like, you have to go. This is like not an optional choice. You know, you go to your shoot. I'll do the doctor's appointment. So I'm in Vancouver, obviously totally distracted. They go to the doctor's appointment and Theo is two. And he's like, I'm on FaceTime with him. I'm really, really trying not to cry. And he kept saying, now I am crying, mommy, where are you? Where are you? And I had this moment where I thought, you know, physically I'm in Vancouver, but like, why am I here? And I felt like this is a choice I'm making and no one's forcing me to be here, but I'm choosing to be here and I don't want to be here. And so I stayed for the rest of the shoot, but I felt like at that moment I knew that I was going to leave. The lighter part of this story is that so the shoot happens, and I don't know if anyone is tracking what happened in Peloton 2019. I went and resigned to my boss the next day. And I said, or when I flew back, I mean, I can't do this anymore. And I said, I'm not. Oh, and by the way, I'm at this point, I was not yet pregnant, but we thought about having another child. But anyway, point is, I said, I don't want to do this anymore. And I'm not jumping to another job. So I will give you as long of a runway as you need to find my backfill, but I can't keep doing this. Fast forward 3 weeks, and he was supportive of that. Fast forward 3 weeks, or a month or so, the commercial comes out. It is universally made fun of as the worst piece of marketing in, you know, brand history. We've ruined the brand. If you don't remember this commercial, I can remind you, it's the woman gets the Peloton bike, and people said it was like misogynistic. Why did the husband, right, fat shaming her? She was such a bad actress. And so the commercial got totally ripped apart. And so it complicated my exit in the fact that then I had to stay longer because I didn't want people to think that I had been fired after. So we were actually going to announce to the company the week that it came out that I was leaving. But then once the commercial came out, then it looked like I had been fired. So anyway, it got really complicated. And then COVID happened, so I had to stay longer. So there's a really long answer to my exit got really complicated. But it was clearly in that moment where I felt like I had made a personal choice that I didn't really felt like lived up to my values. And that's when I decided to leave.
When I describe this show to other people about how people can make professional decisions for personal reasons, I use that phone call with Theo as the example because everybody knows Peloton now. Like, we live through a pandemic. If it wasn't your ad, like, everybody knows Peloton. And you ended up, your exit ended up coming in the middle of the massive spike. So if you looked just through a purely professional lens, it's like, well, why would you possibly leave when you're nailing it? How do you answer that to people?
ironically, now Peloton's in less of a big moment, so I don't get the question as much, but I used to get that question all the time. And I always point to, and I don't usually tell the story about Theo because I feel like it's particularly personal that I just decided to share with your entire podcast listening guest, I mean group, but ended up actually getting pregnant with my third right after that. So I'll normally just point to my third child. I was about to have my third child. I was, you know, it was the right thing for my family, but I feel like it always sort of leaves this, there's this kind of elephant in the room, or at least for me, an elephant in the room of like, I'm not really telling you the full story and you're not really believing that someone could actually walk away from their career for personal reasons.
Do you think people buy it? Like, what do you think they're filling in the blank with?
No, I don't think people buy it. I think, so actually another moment where I actually decided that this wasn't the right role for me was I was asked to speak at the Fortune Most Powerful Women's Conference earlier that same fall, which felt like from a professional standpoint, a dream. It was a room full of, you know, the most important women. These were women that were at the top of their game. And I sat at the dinner and I was so honored to be able to speak there. And I sat at the dinner and I met all these really interesting people, and all of the people sitting around the table all made comments about how they always felt restless when they were at home with their kids. They never really saw themselves as being a parent. And I sat through this dinner and I just kept feeling like, I don't feel like this is me. And I really care about my career and I think that I'm good at what I do, but that doesn't mean that that's actually how I want my life to be defined. I just felt really alien in that room. So fast forward to when people ask me, you know, why I left Peloton, and I say, you know, it was my family for personal reasons. I feel like they don't really believe me because they, in a lot of, not to, you know, make everyone into one giant stereotype, but many people, I feel like, see an ambitious person and a successful person and don't see that there can be shades of that, and don't see that maybe because you're good at something, it doesn't mean that you want to be doing it, you know, 100% of the time.
So how do you reconcile that? Like, do you think that now you're the same ambitious person, but in a lower ambition cycle? Do you think that you've changed the definition of success? Like, have you moved the markers? Like, how do you reconcile that? Like, you are a very ambitious person. You always have been. You were much better in school than me, always.
Well, being good at school and being ambitious are not the same thing. I think I'm good at following directions. But I would say I think I'm still as ambitious. I think I've just been able to zoom out and think about my time differently and think about what ambition looks like differently. So when I think about, you know, I'm sure at some point we'll talk about what I'm doing now, but when I think about what I'm doing now, the ambition of what I'm doing hasn't changed. The vision of how I want to make an impact in what I'm doing hasn't changed. The way that I'm doing it does look different.
Do you mean the way that you look do it, like the content of it? Like, it's not Peloton, now it's soccer and sports investment? Or do you mean the content, like that last night you could have been watching the Gotham preseason game in Columbia and instead you were at your kid's basketball game?
I like that. I would say thinking about that, you know, I think I can often fall into the trap of, you know, what, like the classic saying of like, perfect shouldn't be the enemy of the good. I feel like I say that, but I actually really mean perfection. And I've tried really hard to embody that a little bit more and to say, you know, perfect example of what you just said, of there was a Gotham preseason game last night. My kids really wanted to go to the high school basketball finals. And I took them to that. And I had been on Zoom from the minute they left for school to the minute they walked to the door at 5 o'clock. And I said, you know what? They don't want to watch this preseason game. No offense to the preseason Gotham team. They wanted to go to their high school game. And so that's where I'm, you know, changing my priorities. But honestly, it's a battle every single day. It is so easy when I open my phone at 5:30 every morning and I see 1,300 unread emails, which is what my current inbox looks like. Like, that is like nails on a chalkboard. I'm sweating just saying that out loud. But I'm trying to live in that because I know that what success looks like is not getting to inbox zero. It's being able to spend an hour with my kids before they leave for school, before I, you know, start working.
Yeah. So you found a different version of success. And so yesterday was successful for you.
Yes. That is a good way to think about it. Yes. I would say so.
Yeah. Do you seem surprised? You don't think yesterday was successful?
No, I think you're right. I think it was. I think it's hard. It's like intellectually easier to say success looks like being able to find a better balance than I've had in the past. You know, I think part of a new version of success is knowing what you can delegate and what you have to own yourself, right? Like, what are the things that what decisions can my team make without me? And what decisions do I really have to make? But then you have to live with those decisions. Like, then I sit in a revenue meeting, you know, I'm sitting there thinking like, huh, I would have done that differently. But that you can't have it both ways. Like, if I've delegated that decision, then I've delegated that decision, and I'm not going to be the one. I'm not going to undermine my team. You know, I think when I think about like what makes a good leader, I'm a big believer in delegating to your team, but then they have to be able to own that decision and make that decision on their own, so that you're not both, you know, saying you take the call, I'm not going to join because I'm going to go to my kid's basketball game. But oh, by the way, I don't like how you made that decision, so I'm going to go change it later.
But why do you think you work so hard? Like, you just said you've gone from like one thing to a next, and like, you're always trying to hit the perfect. Like, why do you work so hard?
I think I have a vision for what success looks like or what good looks like. And it's really hard for me not to go try to achieve that. You know, I often think to myself, like, I wish I didn't have such a high standard. It would be easier to wake up every day and just think like, huh, what will this day bring for me, rather than what my current calendar looks like, which is like color coded every 30 minutes. I know where I'm supposed to be, you know, until I go to bed that night. But I think it goes back to, I feel like I have when I see a problem in the world, and not that I would consider my current, you know, work a problem, but when I see something that I think can be better, it's really hard for me not to say, I want to go help that thing become better. So if, you know, talking about Gotham, for example, in its current moment, this is a team that, or women's soccer in general, is a sport that has not gotten the same attention as men's have, you know, for so long. And now we just won the championship last year. We have 7 teams on the national team. We have the best players in the world. And our current average ticket attendance, you know, from last year, well, hopefully will be better this year, is low. And we don't fill a stadium. And so it's hard for me. You know, I could have come into the ownership seat and said, like, yeah, it's good enough. Let's just keep running the same play. But I can't look at, you know, the problem here being filling a stadium, and say, like, this is good enough. Like, I feel like I have to give it my best shot to get it, to make it better.
Well, I also feel like meeting the players and seeing it up close, like, it just makes you feel so committed to them. Like, you had seen them before I had, because you had been working on this deal for months. The first time I met any of them was when we literally flew to the championship the day after we'd signed for the team and stayed in the hotel with the players, and like, we're really in there up close with them. And just to see the way they are so committed, they work so hard, and they're so committed to one another, like, I feel like it just makes you want to do right by them.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've obviously been around team ownership for a long time with the Giants for 30 years and being around the NFL. The way that the players in the NWSL and at Gotham were so thankful for us coming in and being a part of ownership, because to them, it signaled that people believed in them. You know, as you just said, so we closed the deal in a way. We've been working on the deal for 9 months. We closed the deal finally on Wednesday. I flew out on Thursday. I land. The PR person pulls me aside and is like, okay, you're going to go speak to the players now. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to say to these players? This is so embarrassing. I'm intimidated. I haven't showered. Like, this is horrible. I haven't prepared. I like to prepare, as you can tell. You know, what am I going to say? And so who knows what I said? But every single one of the players came up to me afterwards and said, thank you for being here. And it made me realize that by our family coming in and coming off of investing in the NFL, the most established league in the world and in this country, and saying the next sports team investment that we are going to make is in Gotham, the women's soccer team in New York and New Jersey. That was an investment in these players. And that was a belief in them that we could help with them, make them into what I think we all believe that they can be. And that's where I think, to your point, seeing the players and having that conversation face to face really brought it all to life for me.
Yeah, I felt like that kept coming up. I mean, I had so much less background than you, didn't had zero interaction with anybody until literally we landed
at the championship game, and that Friday night was the owner's dinner and the league dinner, and people kept coming up to me, and I am not you, although maybe they couldn't tell the difference, I don't know. but they kept coming up being like, well, now we're real, like this is validating because you guys are in the room now we're real. And I was like, oh, I feel like a responsibility to like really show up for you guys here.
Well, I think, you know, to your point of like, why do I keep working so hard? I think it is that responsibility. I think by investing in Gotham, we have made a commitment that we are going to help this league improve, and we are going to help this team improve and give it the credibility and give it and help achieve the success that we all believe that these players deserve, that this league deserves, that this fan base deserves. And so there is this responsibility, I think, at this point to say, you know, we've decided to make this investment. Now we are going to do everything we can to make it be successful.
You were quoted in an article, well, you had an entire article, I think, in Entrepreneur magazine, where you made the case that this is good business. So I think that actually may help us get back to our origin story here, our Gotham origin story. So how did you make the jump from Peloton to now owning Gotham?
So I left Peloton, as I said, in summer 2020 with the real desire to take some space and not be working 100 hours a week, which clearly that didn't last very long, but that was the hope. And so in that time, I started working with our family at the New York Giants, really representing our ownership interests there, thinking about ways in which I could bring a tech company perspective like Peloton to a very established brand like the Giants. And that was what I had planned to do. But pretty quickly, it became clear to me that the world of sports was changing, and there were these established leagues like the NFL, but then there were all these upstart leagues and teams and technologies in and around sports that were all innovating. And we had an option as a family to say, as owners in this league, to say, are we going to kind of lean back and let these innovations happen around us? Or are we going to lean forward, and are we going to actually be a part of these disruptions and maybe even help lead these disruptions? And so I started our family sports investment arm called Next Three. The idea being, again, that we wanted to have a front row seat to the disruptions happening in sports.
Why is it called Next Three?
Oh, well, I'm really bad at naming things. So I asked Will, my husband, for a good name, and he is the person who named this. So in pickup basketball, I feel funny talking about, I'm really not a pickup basketball player, but in pickup basketball, when you play, you know, you three of you play, and then like you win, and then the whoever ref next person says like next three. So it's this idea of, you know, the next three up. So it's the idea of kind of, we're looking forward in sports. We're not looking backwards. We're always thinking about what the next platform is. So we started Next Three, and the idea was really, we had no thesis. The idea was, we're just going to start in listening mode, and we're going to understand, where are the trends? Where do we see the sports world going? And it became pretty obvious pretty quickly that sign after sign was pointing to the growth of women's sports, and particularly the growth of women's soccer. And we wanted to be a part of that.
What kind of deals did you pass on?
Oh boy, so many.
Like 150, right?
We're going to take a short break for some ads.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Now back to the show.
Like 150, right?
Oh, at least. Yeah, we've probably looked at it. We probably looked at 150 before we invested in Gotham. Oh, they range from everything from stadium technology to other upstart leagues to media companies. And I would say most of them are really interesting concepts. We just focus and we've tried to be helpful to many of them, new ticketing companies. We've tried to be helpful to them even if we did not invest. But we were really specific about feeling in every investment we looked at, we said, why are we the people on the cap table? So if you cannot articulate why me, Carolyn, should be on your board, should be working with your leadership team and what value I can add, then it's not the right investment for us to be making at the time.
Oh, so you were looking for like serious engagement. Like you were looking for deals where you could like really be in the weeds.
Well, now that you say that, I guess, well, of course I ended up here. We weren't looking for, I wouldn't say we were looking for, to be fair, in the ways, but we were definitely looking of where we could be adding value to companies.
And looking through the lens of you, looking through the lens of the Giants, like how did you think about it?
Well, it's a good question because at first, I think the original thesis was where do we add value as owners of the Giants or co-owners of the Giants? And that, and many companies, obviously, to be able to open the door to a relationship with the Giants was really important. Interestingly, probably as many companies, if not more, were more interested in my experience at Peloton. And they, as they were thinking about how do we go build our brand? How do I go build a community around a product and kind of looking at the lessons of Peloton and actually wanting that as part of their why we would be on the cap table as well.
Yeah. And why this team?
We looked at actually several NWSL teams, one of which through you, and we really enjoyed getting to know all these other owners through the process. And I would say there were probably two reasons we ended up investing with Gotham. One was we really liked the current ownership. We felt like we aligned. They were so, Yael, the GM, felt like there was so much progress being made on the soccer side that Yael had a really clear vision. She wants New York and New Jersey to be the capital of women's soccer globally. We felt like we could really buy into that vision and we could help her build on that vision. So we really liked the management team and really liked the current ownership and felt like we could partner together on that vision. The second piece I feel like I can't not share is I thought about our family's legacy. And so when I was sharing this deal actually within our family and getting people's opinions, and everyone kind of came back to the story about our grandfather. And so when our grandfather he grew up in Brooklyn, lifelong, you know, came from rags to riches story, had an opportunity to invest in the NFL, which was truly like a lifelong dream. But he said he ended up buying 50% of the New York Giants, obviously. But he always told this story of that he had an opportunity to invest in 100% of several other teams. But he always said, like, I'm a poor kid from Brooklyn. Why would I buy 100% of, you know, fill in the blank other team when I could buy 50% of the New York Giants? And our family legacy is here. Our family history is here. And so having the opportunity to invest in the New York, New Jersey team felt like kind of the pinnacle moment for us.
Were they on the market or did you have to walk in and be like, we are New Yorkers and we want the NWSL and we love it here and we'd like to be here?
Well, that's a good question. Everyone's always a little bit on the market, but I did go, you know, for the right people, everyone's always a little on the market, but I did go. It was so intimidating. I went to go meet with Tammy Murphy, Governor Murphy's wife in New Jersey. And I walked into the governor's office to tell them why I am the right person to be her investor and, you know, co-lead this team with her. And it was really intimidating. But she liked it. And here we are.
Wait, so can we be in that moment with you for a second? Because at this point, like, yes, you're looking at deals for our family. But like, it's not like you're walking in with like
like in your job position, like you are still spending a lot of time at home with your kids now. So now you're walking in and you're like, hello, governor, I would love to be your business partner. Like, what is in your head as you walk into this moment?
Yes, that is true. That is exactly what I did. I guess I just kept thinking, you know, I think the biggest thing I was intimidated by was just I'm a younger generation than Tammy. I'd never met her before. Obviously, you know, I watched a ton of press around her before I walked in. And so I felt like I hoped we had shared values, which I think we very clearly did. But she's so incredibly successful. I was so intimidated. I actually always think about that I feel like I can get more done in a day than any human being. And I always caveat except for Tammy. No one gets more done in a day than Tammy. She's so efficient with her time. But anyway, it was really intimidating. And I just kept kind of going back to this feeling of like, I deserve to be here. And I've worked, you know, I have credibility. I'm coming, obviously, again, on behalf of my family, but I'm also coming with my own credentials. And pretty quickly, the conversation with Tammy got to Peloton. We talked a lot about what I did there. And I think that gave me the support and strength to realize like that I had a voice. There was a reason that I was in that room, not just because that I was representing our family, but also because of the work that I had done.
Yeah. And throughout that process, like from that first meeting with Tammy on, was there anything, and I ask this not because I am doubting you, but because I think it'll be helpful for our listeners to hear you talk through this part, but were there any particular questions that kind of like knocked you off and made you second guess yourself that, and then how did you build yourself back up to remind yourself that you do deserve to be in that room and you do deserve to be in that deal?
I feel like there are questions literally every day that make me feel like, why am I the person in this seat? What, you know, do am I the right person to be leading this? Is there someone better to be leading this? Why me? I would point to, you know, as part of the investment process for sure, but even just once we closed. And so very quickly, I then became the governor of the team, which means that I represent the team at the league board. And so again, I walked into my first board meeting again in California 2 days after we closed our investment. And you know, I was incredibly intimidating. It's a room full of private equity investors. It's a room full of other NFL owners, MLB owners, NBA, I mean, you name it, that World Cup stars from on the soccer side. And I obviously didn't say anything in the first meeting because I felt incredibly intimidated. And I was talking to Jessica Berman, our commissioner, after, and I was like, oh, Jessica, I can't talk in that room. Like, that is not for me. And she looked at me and she's like, of course you're going to talk. You have to talk. You have a really important seat on that table. You represent one of our, if not our biggest media market, one of our biggest media markets. You need a voice at the table. And so I actually just finished a league board meeting right before walking into this. And I, you know, every time I open my, you know, turn off my mute button on in a board call, I am completely intimidated because I have much less experience than most of the people in that room. But I feel like I just kind of keep reminding myself, like, there is a reason I am here. The team has trusted me to be at this table. Our family has trusted me to be at that table. And I don't take that lightly, but I have to be here and I have to own that voice.
Yeah. You had mentioned that Yael, our general manager, had articulated a really excellent vision for the team. What is that vision? And are you sticking to it still?
Yeah. So Yael's vision is for New York and New Jersey to be the capital of women's soccer globally. I would say we are sticking to that vision, but we're adding a little bit of a marketer's lens to it, too. So I would say what my vision is for the team is to be one of the best global sports franchises, period. So if you think about global sports brands, there's, you know, Dallas Cowboys, New York Yankees, Manchester United. These are brands that transcend the sport that they're in. Like, think about how many people walk around with a New York Yankees hat that probably could not name a single person on that team, right? It's just they love the brand. It's like, oh, it's New York. It's the Yankees. There's no women's team on that list. And there's no reason that Gotham cannot be on that list. So when I think about our vision, it is that it is to be one of the best global sports franchises. That also, as part of that, on the soccer side, we should be the global capital of women's soccer. There's no reason we can't be, but I would say our ambitions have grown past that as well.
One of the things that hadn't occurred to me, but I found out from having conversations with the IL, is that so many of the US teams are on the West Coast and the European players are really good and would consider playing in the US, but don't want to go all the way to the West Coast because they can't get back and forth to Europe.
And so even just geography gives us that advantage. Like if we can show that we are just as good to play for, if not better, than European teams, South American teams, West Coast teams, there's no reason then they can't consider Gotham.
We absolutely should be the global destination for players to want to come play for. First of all, we just won the championship. We have an incredible coach who just won Coach of the Year. We have an incredible GM who, if there was GM of the Year, she would win that too. And we're in New York, to your point. I mean, we have the diversity. We have the languages spoken. We are close to Europe if you want to go to Europe. There is absolutely no reason that we cannot compete globally for talent.
And Yael talks about a people-first mentality. Can you explain what that means, like specifically within the team, how you get there?
Yeah. So in one of my first conversations with Yael, I realized how much we would have a shared vision, because she talked about, I can't remember if she used the term or if we relabeled it to be player NPS. So if you are in the tech world, there's a metric called NPS, which is Net Promoter Score. It's basically, would I refer a friend to this product? And so at Peloton, that was the holy grail. Everything we worked on was towards our NPS score. John Foley, our founder, always talked about we wanted a Net Promoter Score of 100, which no company has ever had, but why not us? And that's very much the mentality we take on the business side at Gotham, is we want people to come to games. We want people to experience our brand, but then we want them to go have a really great experience so that they share that with their friends. And you could call that, and we'll measure that, and we will look at that as NPS. To talk about that on the player side is really innovative. So Yael's vision there is that she wants to build a club, and she is building a club where not only do players want to play there, but they will recommend their friends to play there too. And that's how you really build sustainable talent. You know, if you think about it is so hard to build a championship team. It's even harder to build one that can compete year after year. But the way that you do that is to continue to attract talent. And the way that you attract talent is to build a great player experience. So where players have an incredible experience playing for the team, whether they're, by the way, they're the starters or they're the last person on the roster. If they have a great experience as players, and then they go and tell their friends to play there as well.
What I heard someone say, maybe you, maybe I'll, but that it's extra important in this league because everybody knows each other. Like all the players know, like the league just isn't that big. So the word good or bad gets out really quickly.
Yes.
Like people will know.
Absolutely. Which again speaks to, like, we just have to keep raising the bar because the word does get out quickly. And so we want to be very clear on this is the best place to play in the league and you need to all come.
Yeah. Okay. So talk to us about the business side, the marketing side. How are you innovating?
So as I said before, the soccer, we were really fortunate to walk into an incredibly stable soccer side of the team. We had been working on the deal for many months. When we actually first started talking, they were not as good as they ended up being by the time we closed the deal. But we ended up, you know, winning the championship. And again, with Yael and Juan Carlos, we feel really strong about that vision. Our job now on the business side is to build a business side of an organization that matches that. And so again, if you go back to the vision of we want to be one of the best global soccer brands in the world, the way that we need to build a business side that matches that, that is able to live up to that. I would go back to this. So the way that we thought about that is we talked a lot about Peloton earlier, but I would point to three things we did at Peloton that really contributed to its success and I think can at Gotham as well. So the first is, when I think about what made Peloton so successful and what made my job as a marketer really so easy, honestly, is that we had the absolute best product. And then our job was to go build an end-to-end consumer experience around it so that consumers, again, once they came into the brand, they loved it and they were never going to churn, like they were never going to stop using their product and they were going to refer their friends. And so if I think about Gotham, we have part of what attracted us to the investment in the NWSL is that it is the best product on the field. We have the best players in the world. We have the best product, particularly Gotham, on the field. Now we need to go create a fan experience around that so that when you go to the stadium and you go watch the players play, or you follow us on social, or you watch our content online, however you engage with the brand, it's a great experience so that you stay engaged and you want to tell your friends. Second point is, when we were building the Peloton brand, it was really clear really early. You know, I would meet people at cocktail parties and they'd say, I love Peloton. I love Allie Love. I love Peloton. I love Cody.
And it was really clear that your relationship with the brand was through the instructors. And so our job as marketers was to help go build the instructors' brands and go amplify those brands so that we continue to build the Peloton brand through those instructors. Same thing at Gotham. When you think about women's soccer and you think about, you know, for people that are passionate about women's soccer, you think about Allie Krieger. I should have worn my Allie Krieger fan club shirt, as I always say I should have done. You think about Lynn Williams. You think about Midge Purse, Rose Lavelle. Those are the stars. We have stars. It is our job now to go help them build their brands. They've done a great job already, but help them continue to go build their brands, which is going to help the Gotham brand as well. And then the third piece is community. I think for anyone that is a part of the Peloton community, you know that, you know, you might have come in thinking you were buying a product, but the reason you stay is because you join this community. And whether you were in, you know, the moms of Peloton or my husband loves the straight guys who love Cody subgroup, there's a wide range of groups, but really the Peloton community is so special. And we have the opportunity to do the same at Gotham. We have I keep thinking of it as like the world's best kept secret, because the fans that are a part of Gotham are so loyal. We have such an active fan supporter group in Cloud9, such an active fan base, but it's small. And it is our job, again, as marketers, as owners, is to go build that community and get people and create a community experience so that when you become a fan of Gotham, you're not just a fan of the product on the field, you are really joining a community.
We're going to take a short break for some ads.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now back to the show.
You were on a panel last week at the Female Founders Fund with Allie Krieger and the commissioner of the WNBA, which was super interesting to hear. And she said something that I wrote down, so I'm pulling it up from my notes. She said, you need three things to really create a league. You need name recognition, you need games of consequences, and you need rivalries. How does that hit for you? Like, do you think we're doing those things or do you need different things? Name recognition, you're definitely working on by building the brands.
Name recognition, we are working on every single day. You need games of consequence. So interestingly, we got them eked into the playoffs. So it was a 1-point difference. We were at the game that we
tied, which we were all kind of waiting around to see where were we going to fall in the playoff ranking, whether or not we even got into the playoffs. So we were the sixth ranked, the bottom ranked team. And then obviously we ended up winning. So I think we have games of consequence, because that is not in every league. You have the sixth ranked team that ends up going to the championship and winning. Although the Giants did that too once. Anyway, do we have rivalries? I think we're building them. I think this, the league is so early. There is a team in Washington, the Washington Spirit. There's about to be a team in Boston. We keep talking about this LA New York rivalry that we have to have going. But I think this is where, joining the NWSL is a little bit of like a startup / marketer's dream, because the world is our oyster. If we want to go create rivalries, we can go do them.
That's the one thing I actually kind of wonder about in all of those in that list that she came up with, because part of what I love about it is that everyone is not just metaphorically linking arms, like all rising tides lift all ships. Like, they are literally linking arms. Like, everybody in this league is helping each other, because we all have to succeed for anybody to succeed. But can we create rivalries out of that is my question, because people really like each other. Do we need them?
You know, it's funny that you said that, because I actually would revise. I think for any, I don't want to dispute for her, I think that list makes sense. I think what's been really interesting to be a part of the league in the last few months is how much we all, every owner around the table, recognizes that we will all succeed if the others succeed as well. And there is this very, we debate at the league level all the time. There are rivalries on the field, but every single owner in that room will say that Gotham will be better when Bay has an amazing opening night and sells out their stadium. We are all, Chicago is better for the fact that Kansas City was able to build their own stadium. Every team will succeed. I think that was why so many people were so excited. So many of their owners were so excited about us coming into Gotham, because they recognize, again, in this really strong media market of New York, we need to have really strong ownership here and people that are going to continue to fight for this league's survival. So I think there is this feeling around the league of, the league's in a really good place right now. It's so much better than it's been in the past, but it's still fragile. And it's going to take all of us working together to continue to ensure its success.
What do you this feels like a crazy question of, like, what do you think is next? Like, I feel like you're in the next, but like, what do you think is next?
Well, obviously, right now we are very heads down on Gotham, but I would say I would love to at some point zoom out and think about, continue. And we are still making investments out of Next 3. So I would kind of zoom back out to being the CEO and founder of Next 3 and thinking about where are the next great disruptions in sports. Obviously, again, we made a big bet in women's soccer and we continue to believe in it, but there are going to be others. And whether that's another sports team, whether that's another groundbreaking technology on the fan development side or a media side, we are going to continue to think about, I'm going to continue to think about where are those disruptions and what role do we want to play in building those disruptions?
Okay, so what can people expect going to Gotham this year and how can they access all of those things?
How can they access it? Well, you can just go online and buy a ticket. So the team plays at Red Bull Arena in Harrison, New Jersey. It's very easy to get to on the path. If you're coming from New York, I don't want to judge of where you're coming from. You can also watch games online. There's a couple of media partners, ESPN, CBS, Amazon, Scripps. And what can you expect? So we've been really focused on improving the fan experience, as I said before, because to me, that really unlocks creating this great fan engagement that you will then be, once you come to a game, you will become a fan if you have a great fan experience. So TBD on what that looks like. We are still figuring that all out, but we're really thinking about from the moment you park your car, the moment you get off the path to the moment you leave, how are you engaged? How are you, whether you're a diehard soccer fan and you're dying to get Rose Lavelle's autograph, or you are new to sport and just learning, what is your experience at the stadium? How easy is it? What are you doing pregame? Are you maybe making some signs, not to throw some sprinkles of what might come? Are there some tattoos maybe you can do? So figuring all that out, but like, what is that pregame experience? And then how is your experience within the game? What does that look like? And then how do you leave? And what, importantly, again, as a tech person, like, what is the feedback loop for us to continue to get better? And how are we getting feedback from fans so that we continue to improve game after game?
One of the things that I keep saying to people is that going to sporting events as a family is such an important core memory for people. Like, people love to have it as part of their family tradition. But regularly going to sporting events as a family of four is becoming wildly unaffordable. And so people do it once a year, like maybe if that. This is still one of those things that you could
be together regularly at. Like, I think that, and I kind of feel like that comes up because people say like, oh, I can't wait to take my daughters. And it's like, yes, take your daughters and take your sons. Like, this is a professional sports experience that your family can experience together.
Absolutely. That was one of the things when the first game we went to, I brought Theo, our 6-year-old son, I think it was 6. And, you know, we're sitting there like, oh my God, this is so cool. But, you know, people are screaming and they're cheering. And I look over at Theo and I'm like, God, Theo. And he's a huge NFL fan. I'm like, Theo, these people are here screaming and cheering just like in a Giants game, but they're cheering for a women's soccer game. And he was like, I know. And I was like, no, it's a women's game. And he was like, no, I know. Like, I'm watching what's happening. And I think it gave me so much hope and made me realize how big of an opportunity this is, that this is not, yes, it is important that we are creating role models for young girls that don't necessarily have them in professional sports today. That's incredibly important. But this is not just a sport for women. This is a sport that, again, these players are the best at what they do. This is a sport that is appealing to all types of people, men, women, however you identify. This is a sport for you because, again, we have the best product on the field. And that gives me so much hope for what this sport can do and where this league can go, because we are really building an incredible both team at Gotham, but also a league nationally.
And the point about our kids' generation not realizing that being an exceptional women's team hasn't been the norm thus far, will be the norm. It is now. But I keep a box of Gotham shirts and hats in the trunk of the car so I can just give them out to people as we're going, so we can, you know, get those fans one by one.
Get those fans anywhere. Exactly.
Get those fans anywhere we can. And Dean asked me why we're doing it. And the other day he was like, but what if they already have a women's soccer team that they like? And I was like, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Amazing problem to have.
Then I guess we have a rivalry.
You are looking for a rivalry. You've just found it.
Yeah, we just found our rivalry. That will be a great problem if we can come to that. Maybe they'll consider 2 women's soccer teams. So what is one thing that at the time you saw as a total low and you thought, I'm never going to get myself out of this? And then now in retrospect, you look back at it and you see it as having really launched you.
Well, I already told you when the entire world laughed at my commercial, that was a low. I had always dreamed of working in sports and working at the Giants. It was something from when our grandfather got involved with the team 30 plus years ago. He was such a role model to me. And I really saw myself, filling his shoes one day and going to work with the team. And that being kind of my life dream. I worked in marketing because I wanted to do that. I went to business school. That's what I wrote my business school application essay about. And then I actually had an opportunity to do some consulting work with the team after I left Pepsi, after I had my first child. And it was not great. And I had this feeling, and I would say it wasn't great. I sort of felt like I was, was I an employee or was I an owner? I felt like I didn't quite fit in. I felt like my ideas weren't totally valued. And I had this real crisis of my entire career, from my college essay to my jobs out of college to business school to post-business school, was all very linearly trying to hit that goal. And now I don't know that that's the goal I want. And I had this real moment of I don't even know what I like. I only know how to follow the path that I'm on. I don't actually, people would say but what do you like? What are you passionate about? And I was like, I'm not passionate about anything. I'm passionate about following the path that I'm on. And that was a really scary moment for me. And it's actually how I ended up at Peloton. I never thought that I'd go to a startup, but my friend from business school actually interviewed for the job that I ended up taking. That sounded like I took it from her. I didn't take it from her. It wasn't the right fit for her, but she interviewed for the job. And then she was like, it's not right for me. I think you would like it. And I remember walking in Central Park with her, with a stroller with Penelope. And I was like, ugh, I don't know. I love fitness, but it's not what I think I'm going to do with my life. And I don't really know if I want to be working full time right now. And it really opened the door to this role, which I think completely changed my trajectory and gave me so much confidence to be able to now, many years later, do what I'm doing now. But I only got there, I think, because I felt like I kind of got to a dead end of the path that I had been on before and had to kind of take a few steps back to say okay, what's a new path that I can go find?
Yeah, I don't think you ever would have considered a startup had you not been up against the wall.
No.
You're not a startup kind of gal.
No, I know. And every time I felt like I was kind of faking it the whole time I was at Peloton. I'm like, yeah, I'm so cool and hip and downtown and risky, which I'm not. But yes, no, I felt like the only reason I got there is because I felt like I had to, you know, the path I was on wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So I felt like I had to kind of reevaluate.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's essentially the thesis of this whole show. Like, we only can get to the, like, people look at successes and they're like, of course you're a success. Of course you're a success. You did all these things. Of course you're a success. And it's like, well, I had to have done all of these things and had all these experiences and a lot of rejections and disappointments to be able to open up these new doors, to be able to have this varied career and, like, get me to be in the best position I could be to be in this job right now.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Kath. Thanks for coming to She Pivots.
This is so much fun.
Don't miss the Gotham FC games this season. Both Carolyn and I will be there cheering on the Bats. So be sure to subscribe to our newsletter at shepivotsthepodcast.com to get our She Pivots discount code for tickets for all Gotham games this season. Thanks for listening to this Candid Convo episode of She Pivots. Check back in weekly for more conversations with inspiring women. To learn more about our guests, follow us on Instagram at shepivotsthepodcast. Leave us a rating and comment if you enjoyed this episode to help others learn about it. Talk to you next week. Special thanks to the She Pivots team, executive producer Emily Edovolosik, associate producer and social media connoisseur Hannah Cousins, research director Christine Dickison, events and logistics coordinator Madeline Sinovic, and audio editor and mixer Nina Pollack.
I endorse She Pivots.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.